What is an eco-city? A city that is more like a gigantic park, where environmentally designed buildings gracefully blend in with the landscape, where pedestrians on walkways, cyclists, buses and cars have equal rights of way, all in symphony among strategically placed gardens, waterfalls, trees and shrubs, and where the air is fresh and clear. A metropolis with frequent, rapid, clean, silent public transport that glides along in a well-integrated network of rail, buses, boats, monorail and bikes. Where out in the suburbs and satellite greenbelts and bird sound, people live a closer community. Neighbourhood support is just that. Neighbours know all the inhabitants of their respective street or vicinity. That homes are bioharmonically designed, aligned to the arc of the sun, have passive solar heating, with all houses having solar hot water collectors on their roofs. Rainwater is also saved and filtered for drinking and to irrigate the verdant veggie gardens, fruit trees and fragrant flower beds. Grey water being used as a backup during hot summers, and street functions are numerous, and kids feel safe to be able to play anywhere in the park-like street. Reducing, reusing and recycling are the international mantras, and for those who don't have compost heaps or worm farms, your kitchen scraps are picked up on a daily basis. Sustainable eco-cities have come of age, and this is where we are heading as climate change starts to etch itself on our awareness and energy costs start to bite into our pocket. In the studio this morning, I have our favourite hero, a man of the people, Bob Harvey, who as the mayor of Waitakere City has a dream for an ecologically conscious city. Welcome, Bob.
Nice to be here. And that sounded just perfect. I wish it was. And I have to tell you that that's been my dream and that's been my vision. The reality is much harsher and much harder. But I think Waitakere has made a difference. And in many ways, we have tried to stand as a model on how it could be. And I think we have made some great progress, but I think we've got a long way to go. I'd like to tell you that. I think that the world you described, I think, is a world of tomorrow. It could be the world of today if we really wanted to commit to it. But I think the consumer today is driven and very greedy and very selfish. And I think it takes a hell of a lot of effort to convince them that there are easier and better ways. Certainly, when we talk of energy, the power rises are so horrific that they will be driven by their pocket to look at solar energy, greater use of the resources, and I think that's important. I wish it wasn't that way. I wish they were driven by the ideal to save the planet for what it's worth, and it is worth something. But I think the world is in terrible, terrible trouble. And I started to talk about that when I was elected in 1992, and now the reality is the truth of tomorrow. That's what Clinton said when he was here. God, did we ever think that we'd hear a former American president say, I'm giving the world 15 years, not 5,000, 15 years. And I thought that was a jolt. If he's saying that, who's listening? Well, I've been listening for 14 years as the mayor of the city, and Waitakere has been listening enough to elect me 5 times. People may say, have they lost their reason out there? No, they are pretty smart people, and that's what an eco-city is about: smart people trying to do the best thing for their kids.
Well, one of the big ones, of course, Bob, is getting people out of their cars. You came into the studio this morning. What was the traffic like?
I came in from Karikari. I was out at my favourite beach last night. I went for a walk on the beach with a couple of mates.
You were lucky.
We're talking about getting a couple of bikes and coming down from Mongolia to the Beijing Olympics. You might say lucky for some. But we're thinking of doing that, and so we're going to buy a couple of Chinese motorbikes. And so we went out to the beach to talk about could we take 3 or 4 months off our lives? We're all in our 50s. I'm in my 60s. And I'm very fond of China. And so I went out to Karikari, and I woke up this morning, and I thought about this interview. And I thought about how I would get into town. And I would certainly like to have driven to Henderson and caught a train. But the trains are not there yet. I wish they were. They're often not on time. There's no double tracking. So one train has to wait for the other train to come. And that, after 10 years of begging, pleading, and planning, is not on. So as fast as we dream the future, it seems the more people around me drive with the brakes on. We should have had in Auckland right now faster, quicker, efficient trains, electrified. I think we've got old museum trains that catch fire and are dreadful.
And are empty half the time.
And empty. And we've got roads that are clogged with one person in it. And I mean, I'm a greater sinner of that as anyone. And I also have double standards too. I said I would sell the mayoral car when I became the mayor, and I would ride to work on a bike. I've ridden to work 5-6 times on a bike in 14 damn years, and I feel quite ashamed of that, but it's the way I have to get around. I do 800 meetings a year. I'm here, I've got to quickly race to another interview, and then I'm going back to the city to interview for the Māori unit. Then tonight I have 2 meetings back to back. That's night after night. I had a night off last night, but that's my life. I can't do that on a bike, and to be honest, I can't do that on the train, because there isn't any.
Yes, yeah, so I realise that if we had, say, the Germans come in and set up a train system, even throughout New Zealand, everything works in clockwork in Germany. Why no dual carriageways? It must be very frustrating, Bob.
Because I think the bureaucrats, and I might be one of those, believe that we will get things in New Zealand in the New Zealand way, which takes years. And we're so far behind in some of those traffic infrastructure. I mean, they cannot blame the mayors of Auckland for scrapping. Believe me, Tim, we haven't scrapped. We might have had some problems with each other over one or two issues, but we've all liked each other, we've worked each other together. I've been on the mayoral forum now for 14 years, and that's a long time. And we've enjoyed each other's wisdom, company, and point of view. So politicians can't say, oh, Auckland has always been held back because the mayors don't get on well. Nonsense. We have asked, begged, planned a better future transportation for our cities. And we ain't got it because the government, and I get on very well with this government, and I didn't get on pretty well with the national government, but all governments keep putting obstacles in our way. Just when we're up and running, they bring another group in, an ARTA or a new transport authority, and then they have to pay the checks to another group, like the nonsense of the trains that OnTrack own the tracks, but the ARC own the trains, and the councils might try and clean up the corridors, might. So there's people that own the top of the ground. There's another group that own underground. We're not allowed to talk about undergrounding anymore. It's unacceptable. We have to talk about below ground or something to get our trains out. I mean, God, this is the nightmare that we have to go through. And then the government don't send the check to this group. They don't send the check to that. And so nothing happens. And it seems to me, it's like Diana and the Golden Apples. You know, someone's always throwing another apple out to slow people down. Mm. But we are determined that we will try and make a legacy of a better transport system, a more effective transport system, before it just becomes impossible. And Aucklanders know that as they fume with rage. I hope they are, because they should be very, very angry. They should have said they've paid dearly with rates and with taxes for a system that should be up and running now and isn't. That's why World Cup rugby, I think, is one of those deadlines that means something will have to happen. And the other thing I should tell, first time on radio, if you like, breaking news, me and a couple of the other mayors are going to have a go for the 2018 Commonwealth Games. There was a slot there, by the way, that's right now not being picked up and not being bid for Auckland. Sure, I have a hidden agenda, because I'd love to have the games back in Auckland. It means that the government and the local authorities, I'll probably be in a rest home by then, will make sure that we have a system that will take us through the 21st century. And so I am very serious, very, very serious about making a bid for the 2018 Games in Auckland.
Very good. Yes, it will bring the focus.
They need a focus.
Yes,
always said, you know, a hanging always gets the mind focused on how to get out of jail. Mm. And you need deadlines. You honestly need deadlines. Look, down at the waterfront was all those warehouses, all those old decrepit buildings. We won America's Cup, or thought we could, and my God, look what we did. The Viaduct Basin is fantastic. And now the tank farm. You see, I think we should have an iconic space down there. I think the
park.
Tank farm, park, and possibly, yes, possibly, a dazzling contemporary art gallery. So that there's something very beautiful, very open.
Community and cultural.
Absolutely there. That's what it, just that site begs, something beautiful and something interactive with the community. And I'm all for that.
Yes. Now, you've got a population of 200?
Nearly 200,000. All Westies.
Yes.
And all committed to the great outdoors, I think.
Yes.
And the crime is down, which I think is fantastic. We've worked so hard with the courts, the police, to reduce crime. I've got a great police force. There are other areas in this Auckland region that are sad and tragic. And they are sad because crime is high. Young people are unemployed, and generations have been unemployed. And I see that a real blight on the political landscape. And I am determined that the West will be proud and positive, crime-free, graffiti-free. I know that graffiti doesn't harm people, but my God, it frightens people. It looks unsafe and threatening. So we've cleaned up graffiti, and we've tried to create jobs. They're not the jobs that are sustainable long-term. There's a lot, as they might say, burger flippers. In other words, our young people go into malls and, you know, the kind of retail areas and food areas. And I wish they had jobs that they felt more happy with, that they're achieving more. But there are jobs. And when we create jobs, crime drops because kids are working. And I think I want them to work. I want them to feel positive about their lives. I am committed to finding jobs for young people. And we have. We have one of the lowest unemployment rates in New Zealand. When I became mayor, we had one of the highest. We had one of the highest rates of young people damaging themselves, generally after being boozed on a Saturday night. With our last drink surveys and a very tough system, we've reduced that. This is what an eco-city's about. It's about a safe city. When I find people have been injured or hurt, I will visit the family. I'll visit them. I care about every one of the people that live in the city. I, you know, when I read things that touch me, I just care. Yesterday, I went around with the man that runs our stadium to deliver a bunch of flowers. And a note to two people that told me that they couldn't sleep because in the afternoon, I might say on a Sunday afternoon, but maybe they're elderly, because the stadium was raging and a big pop band was there and it was a health thing. Well, I thought, I got the email and I thought, well, you poor devils. I went round with a bunch of flowers. Because I wanted to say, I'm sorry that we did this to your life. Okay. They had a house that they didn't know a stadium was going to be built. But I just wanted to say, hey, I heard what you said, and I feel greatly sorry. I mean, that's what I do.
It's community.
I feel for that. When people have lost a loved one through an accident, I'll go and see them. And people say to me, the councillors, oh, God, that must be terrible. Are you going round? And I say, yes, of course. Because that's what you do, and that's why you are doing this job, because you actually do care, and it is painful. Yeah.
And with 200,000 odd people.
Well, I'm a busy, man. I'm a busy. Well, that's the job. You don't take these jobs if you don't want to be busy.
Yeah.
And when I became the mayor, I decided to commit my life to the job. And I've committed 14 years of my life. And I think it's been the greatest job I've ever had in my life. It's a great opportunity. It takes away a lot of your life with your family. I've got 5 children, but now they're kind of adults, and some of them are at home, some of them not. My wife Barbara is a midwife, so she is committed to the community in a different kind of way, and we have a great marriage and a great relationship, and it's nice because, you know, she doesn't play mayoress because there's no role for a mayoress. They don't get elected or anything like that. And she comes with me to some events, and others I'll say I'll do these myself, and I do them. So I'm home a bit, out a bit, back home, out again. I'll go to places for 20 minutes, 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. There's not a Friday night that I'm not at a fire association, something, you know, giving medals, making a speech. Saturday night's hard, and Sunday night's even harder, I might say, because Monday's the next day. But Sunday night, we'll go to a function. And Sunday afternoon, like this Sunday, I did 3 things. Marvellous thing with the Orpheus celebration, well, commemoration, and then off to another event. So Sunday, I work 7 days a week, and you can't have an eco-city, you can't have leadership, and that's what I do. And so people will say, what do you do running an eco-city? And I say, I do a lot, but I also do bugger-all. In other words, I don't do everything, but I touch everything. Lightly and gently, and cheer it on. I think a mayor's got to have a very light touch. And if he tries to be the financial controller of the city or the CEO, then the city administration will be in trouble. And there's been mayors that do that, by the way. There's mayors that don't get on with the CEOs. And that's a tragedy for everyone. And so I get on very well with my councillors. Have fantastic councillors. Not all of them like me, of course. They stood against some of the things that I stood for. But over the years that they're in terms, we come to like each other, respect each other, and listen to each other. And what I've got now is a council that respects different opinions, different voices. And that, to me, is a triumph. And just recently, we brought a Maori voice onto our council, and I feel so pleased about that. And people said, oh, it's just anti-democracy, you know, how could you do that? Well, I can do it very easy, because Maori make up a huge percentage of my city, our city, and they needed a voice. And if they didn't get elected, then I'll give them a voice. And Mihi Tuhuia is very important to me, because she represents the voice of Maori, like the Tamata Runanga. But one of the councillors, and that's his right, decided that he would not come to the council when she's there. And I think that's very disappointing, because he's really saying, I won't sit with a person that's Maori. And it's against, not against the principle of that, it's against her colour. Simple as that. And I kind of have to wear that. I could start a terrible scrap, I suppose. I don't want to do that, because that was not going to gain Maori or us or Pākehā. And I have to live with that. There are people with set views. But we've changed the system in New Zealand. We've brought to the table of an elected group a voice. And I think that's why I feel proud about some of the things Waitakere does.
Bob, when you model Waitakere, of course we've always heard of Curitiba in Brazil as one, particularly for a transport network. Have you any cities that you can model from? I mean, we see what works in other cities, and we do our best possibly to replicate it here instead of reinventing something. Is there any cities that you like?
I absolutely think Curitiba, I think they probably like this to say, is magnificent. And I've got to know the mayors, and the mayors of that city have been fantastic leaders. And at the Johannesburg summit, I shared this terrific platform with the new mayor. He's part Japanese and part Brazilian. Of course, he's a marvellous combination. And Chris Carter has just been with him, and I sent him a book, and he sent me a book through Chris Carter, and a terrific photograph. And he is just absolutely such a fine man, and they have tried so hard, and I have modelled much of what we have done on that fantastic transformation city. But recently I've been going to Parramatta. Parramatta has been one of those transformed cities too. It was west like us. It was thought of as not being particularly exciting. In fact, it was thought of being pretty crime riddled actually. In 10 years they have transformed themselves to a dazzling New South Wales city and a New South Wales centre, and that's what we've done. When I came to the mayoralty, there was memories of my dear friend Tim Shadbolt, mayhem, chaos, if you like, not because of Tim, but because of scrapping and wacky behaviour. Well, I can be a bit wacky myself now and then, but it had a bad image. If you read metros in the 80s, you shudder. They talk of the West of being full of bogans, villains, you know, bare feet, black jeans, badasses, really. Mm. That wasn't quite true, but there was people that had been marginalised by housing, by governments, by everything, and themselves. There was a lot of drug, there was a lot of dope in schools and in the community. That's gone. Gone. People found jobs. People got older. People found community centres. They didn't have it. People were dumped on the land. And as John Tamahiri said, the West was like Soweto. People were dumped out there in universal houses and Keith Hay houses. Nothing wrong with universal houses except they scraped all the land. They dumped on clay sections. One car. No schools near. No community halls. No chemists. Nothing on those estates. Ticky-tacky boxes on a hillside. You know that. And so crime grew. And the women that were there must have gone through hell. Marriages broke down. Relationships broke down. It was the worst of suburbia. The South in Manukau is still suffering some of those things too. Vast suburbs where people from the Pacific nations were basically housed. I think they were dumped, you know, without resources close at hand, without councils that cared too hard, too difficult, without police that cared too hard, too difficult. And so crime grew like in ghettos. I think we've changed all that. We've built communities around communities, and we have overloved, if you can ever overlove communities, by giving them things that I think matter, you know, resources and partnerships with the police, partnerships with the council, partnerships with councillors and community boards, giving them a voice and giving them trees. We've planted 1 million trees, I understand, in the last 10 years. Maybe some small trees, maybe bushes, maybe flax, but we've brightened their lives and tried to improve their lives. That's what an eco-city is about also, making a difference. And it's expensive because we've made that commitment. We've cleaned up our streams. We've cleaned up the rivers of Waitakere, pulled out the shopping trolleys, pulled out the fridges, pulled out the deep freezers that were dumped and thrown, the paint tins, the 70 years of dumping. We've cleaned up. My good friend who does the Harbour Cleanup Trust, Hayden Smith, and his team every day is on the harbour pulling stuff out of the creeks, up the Horahora creeks. Amazing. And we've paid for it. And so you can paddle up the creeks, paddle up the Horahora creeks. You can walk up and the streams are full of eels because we've cleaned them up. And we've put pathways all the way from the Waitakere's right down to the Waitemata. I thought that would take 100 years to put pathways all the way from the ranges down to the harbour. We've done it in 10. You can walk all the way from Henderson to the Waitemata. You can keep going up the Oroitea streams, and they're beautiful. We've restored nature, and that's what we've done. That's our legacy.
Yes, well, we're definitely in New Zealand. We need to see somebody showing the flag, Bob, and you're doing it. What about say, in the form of solar hot water. Why is there no, say, solar hot water units on every house in New Zealand? I realise that, of course, you're out of central government, but I'm sure that feels good with you to be able to get something like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. I mean, my whole life was in advertising, as you know. And I remember in the 1980s, maybe it was the 1970s, I'm getting so old I can't remember these things, I worked for AHI, and they had a product called BATS. And it was decided by the AHI administration that if we could get the product in every house, it would be terrific. And there was a huge lobby campaign to government to make sure that every new house was insulated.
Pink bats. Yes.
And okay, it was a commercial venture. Big factory made pink bats, and government of the day, I think it was the Labour government of 72, said, yes, every house must be insulated. That's part of the regulations. And I remember I thought it was a triumph of good lobbying for a good product. So I thought the product was good. There was a few products that weren't, like paper insulation that people sprayed up into your eaves and things like that. In fact, the wind blew them into big piles and they didn't work. But bats did. And all the rooms insulated. And savings were made, huge savings, I reckon. But like daylight saving when it came in, big things happened. You know, it was a sea change. I think the same should happen with solar heating. But by the way, I was one of the early advertising agents for the early solar heating, and they were about as big as a football match, patch. They never worked. They were vast and huge and black polythene with pipes in them. And when they broke down, the plumbers didn't know how to fix them, and people said, "Damn that." And so the 70s, which was an age, by the way, where we'd looked at new things, destroyed often the concept of things like solar heating. Now, solar panels are about the size of this desk. And they are so sophisticated. They are small. And, my God, they work. They really work. And I think now every house in Waitakere should have one. Why should they have one? Because power bills will soon be crippling. And a family of two or three or four will find it very difficult, because I have kids that still, in their 20s, have 15-minute showers. I have a son that has a 20-minute shower, and my wife is forever banging on the door. He's 30 years old, and when he's home, he comes in from surf boat training and has a 30-minute shower. You can't get him out of the shower. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, and I think every parent knows that. The kids are in the showers. You know, then they have one towel and they chuck it into the bin, into the basket. Oh, that's, you know. And, you know, look who's talking. The mayor of the Eco City, the kid has a 30-minute shower and uses a towel every 5 minutes, because that's how they do it. Yeah. And you know, I've got like a laundry in my house, you know. It's going all, the machines are going all the time. And I've only got two kids at home now. But, you know, that's the way it is. And so I think power bills will continue to rise, energy will become much more complex. And that's why I would like to see every house with a water tank. No questions. I think every house should have a water tank.
Rainwater.
Mm-hmm. Should be there. We should realize how precious water is. And we should realize how important solar power for our housing should be. And we need to do this now for an economical base. In the 70s, we thought we had plenty of everything. We did it because we thought we were all environmentalists in those days. And the units let us down. Now, they're just fantastic. They're made in parallel importing, I guess. On the internet, I could buy a solo unit for my house from Belgium, from France. The man, I'm sure, in France would ship it. It's about the size of a big basketball, and stick it on my house and heat my water. At a third the cost of what I'm paying Mr. Vector or some of the other energy companies, I guess. But by the way, the power companies think it's a good idea too. We can get the stuff back in the national grid. They're running out of power. So it's a two-way thing. It's a win-win thing. The power companies are not against us doing that at all. And nor is, say, Watercare, who I rate very highly as a very good operator, if we've got water because they are interested in the water out. And that's our big problem, is not water in, but the disposal of grey water.
Yeah, but grey water, of course, I think Toowoomba and Queensland, they've got a huge problem. They're wanting to use grey water whenever they can, to the extent that they're wanting to recycle it, and they're looking at even recycling sewage. And, of course, it's upsetting a lot of people, but
well, you can.
They're short of water.
Yeah, I think the people feel that they don't want to drink sewage. But the fact is, with modern processing, you don't know. And I think when you look at the world, and I read extensively about what's happening with water, water is going from this planet. And the sooner people realize that, that this earth is suffering right now. Don't have to read Al Gore that much to understand what he was saying, earth in the balance, is now. People keep thinking, oh, it's okay, it's in the next generation or three or four generations. It's now. You know, water levels are dropping everywhere, everywhere. And I mean, you look out the window and it's always raining in Auckland during the winter and all that kind of thing. Well, I know all that. And there's the mountains and ice and snow and Taupo and the Great Lakes and the South Island. But hey, the rest of the world is suffering. People, animals, crops are dying. So I'm not paranoid. I just think that you've got to start thinking that this is now. And it's not about governments manipulating things. It's about the planet. And I think this planet, if we don't get it right, will shake us off, as I said, a dog like fleas.
The recent conference down in Wellington, Climate Change and Governance, everyone was saying, we haven't got time. We haven't got time. We're running out of time.
I think we've run out of time, Tim. I think we've run out of time.
That's right. So how do you mobilise people to get involved?
Slowly. I think, as they say, how do you eat an elephant?
Yes,
one bite at a time.
Yes.
Slowly. And I think that's why Thackeray, I can't run North Shore, and I can't run Wellington or Christchurch, but I can have an influence on one city. It's a bit, I don't want to change the subject, but it's a bit like peace. I'm a city the same as New York, Los Angeles, or Baghdad, or Iraq, Iran. We have to have a say about peace. We have to have a say about water. And we have to have a say about resources. We have to make a stand. And the signal you make is heard. It is heard. What I've been doing with Waitakere has been heard around the world. And I'm kind of flattered and I'm kind of humbled by it. But, you know, I get invited to speak in Hawaii. I got invited to speak in Sweden because they heard. I get invited to speak in San Francisco. And I kind of go, and I take the message about what we're doing, and I tell them what we've got right and what we've got wrong and why I think it should be faster. I'm a terribly impatient man, and I think we should be much further advanced than we are as a country, and I think this government needs to be brave and courageous if they want to get elected. The chances are they will get elected, but only if they are courageous. They will not get elected if they sit back and let things happen slowly. This country is bursting to move forward in things that matter. I think our young kids are brilliant, wonderful and marvellous. I don't know if there's one thing wrong with kids these days, because they're smart. They know. And so you say, how do you mobilise that? You mobilise kids. I thought those kids marching in Queen Street against those, not corrupt, but absolutely wrong employment laws were fabulous. You know, radical youth, I love it. I used to be a radical youth myself. When I sit down with Tim, we say, where's the protest these days that we can join into?
Yes.
You know, I mean, we protested against apartheid, got dragged away in paddy wagons, we protested against Vietnam War, and we were right both times. You know, we were vindicated by history. We were right. And I love protest, although people say, well, the last time they came to your council, they got thrown under arrest. Well, they did, because they tried to sit down the meeting that I wanted to start. But I didn't mind the protest. If there's a protest comes to the council, I go out there and state my point of view, you know. And I've never had anyone thrown out of a council, except it happened last month, and I was bitterly, bitterly sad when I invited the people in. I invited them in to speak. A couple of the leaders decided they'd stop the council meeting for various reasons. The cops were there to make a presentation. And the cops got all pissed off because they were sitting there waiting to show how good they were about how crime was down. So they're sitting in the front row, and all these protesters are shouting and yelling, you won't have a meeting tonight. And, of course, the cops are going, what about us? What about us? So I gave, there's a bit of Maori salutes going on, between eye contact and going, well, God, hurry up, get these buggers out, and you can have your presentation. So the cops jumped up and grabbed the guy and threw him out and gave him a bit of a telling off, which I thought was quite funny. I thought he picked the wrong day to try and stop the meeting. But in many ways, I felt a bit sad. That was the first person in 14 years that was thrown out. Not by me, by the way. I was just saying, sir, please just say what you want and then we'll listen to you. But the cops grabbed him and threw him out, because he was... anyway, I felt, as I told you, a little disappointed. Yeah. So roll on the protests.
Because when you send out your rate payments or et cetera, do you have flyers tacked into the envelope to say, look, ratepayers, these are the critical things?
Yes.
And Clinton says 15 years. Al Gore's bringing out a new book this month because he's back on board.
Yeah.
And where it says we have to really start talking at the dinner table.
Getting dialogue.
The families.
Dialogue.
That's right. And then it's like in America they used to have these things called sort of town meetings, and where towns used to get together and people would put submissions in openly. They'd go and talk and discuss things in the town hall. Have you heard much of that?
Well, firstly, we didn't have a town hall, which has always been a bit of a disappointment out there. We've only had school halls. We've never had public meeting spaces, and now we've got our great stadium. Mm. But I have always cheered on community boards because they meet in the areas. There's four terrific community boards, and they have great people there, and they have a public forum before the meetings, and I've brought in a public forum at the council meetings. I think I'm the first and only council of a city in New Zealand that has a public forum. So anyone can come before the meeting for half an hour and shout at us or tell us or be nice to us about issues. And I love that, and I invite people to come from the community. And we have made an art of consultation. It's been very expensive for us, and I don't regret 1 cent spent on consultation. We've had meetings after meetings on issues, and although people mightn't feel happy at the outcome, they can never say in Waitakere, you never listened to us. You never heard our voice. And that has been true with the Rangers debate to try and slow down the subdivisions in the foothills. We've had so many meetings. They've been angry meetings, fair enough. They've been stroppy meetings, fair enough. But they've been also balanced. And so that really came out of Dorothy Wilson, I guess, the Deputy Mayor of the first two terms. She honestly believed, and still does, she works for Dick Hubbard now, that consultation makes a difference. And I do too. People feel included and not excluded. And I feel my legacy has been a city that has included people. No matter how much you might disagree with them, they've got to have their chance. And look, I'm a bit stroppy too, so people write me a shitty letter, and I'll write back, and emails will come in, you bastard. And I go, straight back, I go, well, I'm glad you got that off your chest. You must be feeling good.
Councillor Bob.
I'm glad you could say that to me. And the other guy will, the person on the end might say, thanks. So if someone gives me the stick, I will kind of David Longy them, back, all that kind of thing. Because I think politicians shouldn't be just a kind of punching bag, I go, oh, God, that's a bit on the nose. And so I'll write back straight away.
Yes.
I won't go, my staff will say, oh, you shouldn't reply. I'll say, I'm sorry you feel like that. I'll say that. If it's not too in your face, sometimes it's right in your face. And if that's, there's nobody that can insult me, really, because I think, oh, that's his point of view. And I'll get back in it, of course.
Yeah. Resilient man.
Yeah. Somebody will, the emails, of course, opens up a whole thing. They're public figures.
Yes.
Can be got at and got to. And I feel good about that. I'm in the phone book. There's some poor Bob Harvey in Westmere, and people ringing up and saying, "Oh, you see, you don't even live in the city." And the poor man, he must be woken up with dog barking and somebody giving, somebody a stick. And so I send him a bottle of wine now and then and say, "Oh, I'm sorry, mate," because I'm in the phone book under R.A. Harvey, but he's under Bob Harvey in Westmere. Anyway, you've got to be available to talk about issues. And there's no issue that I don't want to hear about.
Yes, because I had a couple of emails when I put out to the email network that I'd be interviewing you for today. And one said that from the GE network, they said, Bob, he was the one who got Waitakere on board, one of the first to have Waitakere as a GE free.
Yeah.
And they said it wasn't in your bio. And I looked through your bio prior to, and I noticed that you didn't have that. So all the GE people are really pro you at the moment, Bob.
Well, we committed to that, and we won't let them down.
Yes.
That was a major stance. And I didn't think the council that I had, which wasn't particularly pro-green or pro-environment, would have bought that. They did. And so councillors are quite surprising, or council is quite surprising, that they will buy into those things because they know it's right. And even though they might be banging the table, no more money to Maori, so we're sick of them, no more money to young people, we're sick of them, you'll say, hey, this is something that you should be hearing. And they'll go, okay. So, the council can sometimes be very redneck or a bit kind of fascist in some ways, not this one, I've got to say, but a few back were pretty hard-nosed about those things, and they just didn't like community, they didn't like Asian people, there's too many and they're filling our hospitals, and I used to sit there and go, oh God, knock it off, this is the change in New Zealand. And that's why, I could rave a bit about council laws that get elected that have retired often, and so, not in Waitakere particularly, but it does happen. It does happen. I mean, I guess that I've got an older council than I would like. Some people there are 82. And I've got to try and convince them that a youth centre is terrific. Well, it's a pretty big job to. What do you want that money for? That's too much money. We should be spending it on footpaths. Mm. And I say, well, yes, we should. But we should be also putting a youth centre together. But I'd have to say, even people that have been pushing 70 and 80 have supported things.
Yes.
But then they won't support other things that I think, an ethnic community is changing, and the whole rules of the game are changing. We're now a community of 120 different ethnic minorities. And to me, they're just as important as us, because they're here. And they've left behind, I think, lives of tragedy and chaos, blood, they've seen relatives killed, families slaughtered, by Americans probably. When I'm swearing in, Iraqis, and I say to them, when we're having a cup of tea, how long have you been here? Oh, I've been here, 3 years, but in the war of Iran I saw my family killed, and I go, oh, you poor devils, because they all thought, or my counselling, oh, isn't it lucky they're here? But we've given them
an opportunity.
What have we given them? We've given them a home and we've given them that, but have we thought about their despair, their sadness? Tears your heart out.
Yes. Well, I've got a couple of little things. The spraying of the apple moth? This was done by the government, MAF, and they sort of overrode you. The national interest overrides the local interest.
Yep. They did. And I think the people's report that we did last month and this month was a triumph. First city in the world to have a people's commission. We brought commissioners, they did, from around the world and sat in hearings in our chamber. We gave them the council chamber, the council building, to have this important hearing to reevaluate exactly what had happened to us as a community. And I could have sleepless nights thinking of the future. I believe that spray was, if not harmful, had detrimental effects on the city. The birds have gone from suburban gardens. The insects, of course, which they feed on.
The bees.
They've affected, that spray over the 3 years affected the whole life cycle of nature. And I think we are creatures too of nature. And I think it's affected us. And I could be wrong, and I know it's all legal and all that kind of thing. Well, I don't give a damn really, because my personal belief is it will affect the health of the people that were sprayed. I got sprayed 3 or 4 times. I didn't swell up. I didn't have blotches or rashes, but I saw people that I believe were not lying that came in to see me with photographs that made me shudder. Hands twice the size, faces red, purple, blotched, legs. And I said, your husband, your wife, she's never had... Oh, no. These are honest, decent people. Said, she was in the garden, he was in the garden, he was out playing soccer. He wheezed, and then this affected them. I mean, if people manifest those kind of things, then something has happened in their life. You can't ignore that. So I protested with my council. They were terrific. Were we listened to? No. No. It was a national emergency. Get out of our way. We're coming through. We will spray and we will spray and we'll spray. I thought there were easier ways to do it. I thought we could have mobilized the whole city, the volunteers as we did in the water crisis, and sprayed the mangroves with hand sprays. We could have sprayed street by street by street, because it was only in pockets, by the way, rather than spray across the whole bloody city with those massive planes, just letting it go. It was terrible to see the spray drifting over everybody and everything, every creature, every house, every yard, every garden, every fruit
catchment area, everything.
Everything. The whole thing. And so, do I forgive them? No. Will I forget? No. I'll remember it. And that's the way it is. And long after I'm not the mayor, I won't be surprised if my own health suffers, my children's health suffers. You know, I mean, it's those kind of things that you read, and you don't have to read Investigate magazine or Uncensored. You know, you just know, yeah. Hey, it might not be good. Our lives may indeed be in peril because of that. But, you know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I'm feeling healthy, I'm here with you. But I think people were genuinely upset.
Yes. Is there... any sprays? Somebody wrote to me and said, oh, they still use a spray for footpaths.
They do.
Is it?
Yes, I think we do. I think that the hot water one, which I thought was so good, was it called Waipuna? Didn't seem to work. The boiling water sprayed, the old grandma's treatment, throw the boiling water on the blackberry bush.
Yeah.
I don't think that worked. I think we do spray, but I think we try and be very careful. Very, very careful. And I hear sometimes that people have driven into a spray zone that we're doing, and I say to our guys, don't let this happen. Keep the spray down, keep it close, and I wish it wasn't happening, but they say that. And of course, you know, this is what we're doing on the PR Road. We're not spraying the gorse. We don't kill the gorse. We say the native bush will come through the gorse. Oh, people say, oh, that's just nonsense. You know, you just are planting more gorse bushes. And I say, of course we're not. You know, so you get urban legends and you get people pretty unhappy because the PR Road looks like a golden path all the way to the beach. And we're saying, hey, out of that, look into the bushes and you'll see the ferns coming back. And once the ferns come through, and once the native bush comes through, the gorse dies. But right now, they don't believe that. They'd like us to spray. And if we spray, it kills everything. It kills the native bush. The other thing is that we cut the gorse and then dab the end bit with high toxic stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. There is a relationship in an eco city, and this is where we haven't got the balance right. You know, I think we haven't, but at least we're working through those areas. At least I'm talking about it to you and to the listeners. At least there's nothing, I think, that we haven't considered. We might be able to do something about it, and that's regretful. And here I am playing a bit of a politician, sounding which I hate. Oh, I'm trying to justify things. But sometimes there's an area where you have to justify things because you've got no other way of doing it.
And supportive, you've got a number of mayors in New Zealand who are wanting to follow your example and have eco towns or eco cities.
They come all the time to Waitakere. And
yes.
We are highly respected by our peers, which I think is one of the nicest things that happens, that the people in the business of running cities think what we're doing is making a difference in people's lives and picking up marvellous ideas like trees for babies. A lot of my ideas, I want to tell you, are other people's ideas. And I give them credit for that. You know, I never came up with the eco-city idea. I came up with an environmental idea, but it was Peter Madison that came into my office when I was campaigning and said, why don't we make it an eco-city? I could have hugged him. I said, Peter, what a fantastic idea. Elizabeth Frankie, wonderful woman, came up with the idea of trees for babies. Fabulous idea. And that's the kind of people come into my office and say, what if we did this, Mayor Bob? And I say, what a terrific idea. Let's do it. And believe me, within a month, we're embarking on that journey.
You go to many mayors' conferences overseas too. I mean, what do they do?
They talk about the environment. Mayors' conferences that I go to talk about the built environment. And mayors generally get together and find they have the same issues. They have the issues of central government and local government, how they're respected by central government or what they can deliver for their communities. So we don't actually have conferences for mayors talking to each other and saying how good they are. We go to conferences generally where they're looking at climate, what's happening with the environment, what are common issues. And then we generally listen to good speakers and we raise issues. See, let me say that I believe cigarettes, for instance, should be $40 a pack, maybe $70 a pack, because that's the true cost of health and ill health because of that. And I think gas, for instance, should be maybe $80 a litre because of what we have to do to put you in your cozy car and what the taxpayer has to do. If you know what I mean, the true cost of these things is astronomical. The cost of our car, the luxury of our car, the roading, the environmental degradation, you know, the absolute horror of what we're doing with that private vehicle, and of course, and the subsidy. This is, of course, not my thinking. It's the way I reckon the future will say, this is just crazy. For instance, you know, you break your leg and you go to hospital. Half the wards taken up by people suffering the effects of ill health through smoking. Do you know what I mean? That's when you start stepping back and look at what we're doing to each other and the environment for our own pursuit of personal pleasure, greed, or satisfaction is pretty terrible. Now, I'm not talking about going back to the dark days of communist Russia, but people hearing me saying, God, where is he coming from? I'm just saying you've got to start thinking about the true costs of what we do. Obesity in our kids, glorious, beautiful kids that are just increasing their weight by the second because of appalling bad eating habits, you know, that will die at 30 of a heart attack, 40 of a heart attack because of a process which they can't get out of. You know, this is the kind of things that the bigger issues that we will talk about often, because that's what mayors and leaders are should be doing. They should be trying to deliver these things at a local level, because government, I think, is too remote, but we can do it type of thing. I mean, I'm not saying that we run out to West Auckland, which loves all the fast food outlets, and most of our kids are cooking burgers minded anyway and making all those kind of things. But somehow we've got to balance it with health and well-being to say to kids, please, please do not smoke. Please watch your diet. Parents, get your kids, you know, to drink, to eat well, and to play sport. I think that's what we should do. See, I go way beyond roads, rates and rubbish. I could do roads, rates and rubbish on Monday afternoon. Set the rates, do the rubbish, you know, all that kind of stuff. But what about the rest of the week? So we do, an eco city does the issues that matter. We talk about solar heating. We talk about subsidies or that. We talk about conserving water. We talk because, you know, we can't afford continuing the, not the water in, but the water out. And I talk about health to my councillors, and they respond. We're talking about the true costs of a society that has ill health because of hospitals, because of the infrastructure. And I have to tell you, why I'm saying this is everything is interrelated. Nothing is separate in a city, in a country. If you have unemployment, you'll have crime. If you have ill health, you'll have a hospital system jammed, chocker. You'll have people dying. And if you have despair, you'll have suicide. You'll have crime. It follows as night follows day. So I guess it's not because I'm getting old. It's because I'm getting smart. I can see, I say it's like a kite, you know, Maori kite, the weave to the handle. Everything is interrelated. Nothing is separate. And that's like life, like a community. Nothing is in pieces. It's all one great weave.
That's it, Bob, because within the bias there, we're all actually one humanity, and we share the same breath, and it's time for humanity to come together.
It's so fragile, and we are custodians for a very short time.
Yes, excellent, Bob. Well, look, lovely for you to come here.
Thank you.
Because everybody has heard you and seen you on TV, but only for a small soundbite. Here's an opportunity to basically share of your heart, tell everybody that you're on the case, that we need to do something now. So I hope that all the meetings that people have, be at the pub, be at the restaurant, the coffee, or at the table with their children, we have to do something.
Well, I always come out to Karikari when I get the odd job on patrol and climb up the patrol tower and sit up there with me while I watch the swimmers.
Yeah.
Karikari Rescue.
Yeah,
and,
yes.
And have a bit of a... I'm always open, and they know that. People can email me or they can talk to me. I'm in the phone book. I'm on the email. And I'll talk to anyone on any subject, except they have a hell lot of emails and they have a lot of phone calls. But that's what life is about. It's about sharing your ideas. People might like your ideas, but at least they know where I come from. What they see is what they get.